Blog Talk Radio.
Summer evenings are upon us here. This is Om Times Radio,
coming to you from the heart of the Midwest. We're in Wisconsin. And it's a beautiful, beautiful evening here as we are moving toward the summer solstice, which is happening on Monday, June 21st. And in conjunction with that, on June 26th, we have a full moon with a partial eclipse in Capricorn. So the rites of summer are upon us. Tonight, we have a really spectacular show for you. It's Charlotte Resnick. I caught up with her, and we had a chat a few weeks ago. And she is empowering parents and children. So this is a really significant interview, I believe, because it gives people some resources to work with. And, of course, parenting is always a major challenge. And we are at a time in our evolution as a species when we need to make sure our kids are given optimal opportunities. So, without a lot of further ado, I am going to play the interview with Charlotte. I think you will enjoy this, and you can go to her website, check out all of the different resources that she has available for you parents, and I think you're going to have a good time with this. So, here's the Charlotte Resnick interview. Good morning.
Hi, Chris.
Yes, and Charlotte, how are things on the West Coast?
Excellent. Where are you exactly?
I am in Wisconsin, right near Lake Geneva.
Oh, so things have warmed up probably for you.
Yes, it's, yesterday was overcast with rain, which, you know, is part of spring. But today we're looking at mid-80s, and then tomorrow the mid-70s again.
Beautiful.
So it is very moderate and, you know, just very life-embracing as far as I'm concerned. I really do love it.
Yeah, I kind of miss spring and I miss fall because I grew up back east.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly love the weather here.
Yes, well, I'm a native of Los Angeles, ironically enough, so.
Oh, you went the other way.
Oh, yes.
That's unusual.
Well, it was my ancestry. I'm part Potawatomi, and that particular tribe lived on this land that I'm on currently 500 years ago. So,
wow.
Gives me kind of a sense of a time continuum there.
Hmm.
So you are a PhD. This is my first doctor that I'm able to spend some time with. This is
really
a thing. Yes, I've been doing a lot of people who kind of segued into metaphysics or spirituality without a lot of credentials, and then I've been doing a lot of musicians who are in that kind of a spiritual tribe. So so this time I'm getting somebody who has a history of being grounded in the reality of things.
Yes.
Which is really exciting.
Wonderful.
So when did you first make the decision to make children the central theme in your life? When was that you started with that inspiration?
I think back in college I always knew that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I studied psychology and art in college, and it wasn't like a decision. It just seemed to be where I was going. It's not like I thought, well, who do I want to work with? It just seemed the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I just, it was laid out that way.
Yeah, that's good. When we have that clear clarion call early in life, it usually means that that we have a lot that we can accomplish in that particular field.
You know, I didn't know at the time that I would wind up working with children's imagination and imagery and meditation, and that sort of unfolded over time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have that plan. I just knew I was going in one direction, that I wanted to be a psychologist working with children.
Well, I think also as this kind of an evolutionary curve seems to be occurring here in human consciousness, is causing us to reformat the way that we're approaching dealing with a variety of different, you know, schools of thinking and that sort of thing. So it probably it was in tandem to what was going on in society at large.
Yes, and it was probably my path was kind of laid out, and as it was unfolding, I was aware of it. I definitely felt that I was put in certain places for good reason. And when I started out, I was working as a psychologist in the inner city, and being a psychologist, say, in one school, maybe with 1,200 kids. And they were really in bad shape. They were really, it was a dark place. And they were depressed and they were angry. And I just didn't feel that the traditional counseling techniques that I had been taught at USC would really make a dent in them. They needed something really powerful to really touch them.
Mm-hmm.
And synchronistically, I had been exposed to some people doing research using imagery with kids in another school district, and they found that it was very positive results. You know, behavior got better and academics got better, and they led us through some imagery, and it really sparked something in me. And interesting, at the same time, I was starting my own meditation practice. So the two kind of came together. And even though back then, because that was in the early 80s, I couldn't really use the word meditation in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what I was teaching them to do with that first tool that I call the balloon breath. Because it's basically deep breathing 2 to 3 inches below your belly button. And I was teaching them a way to find some comfort and some sanctuary within themselves.
Well, that's quite interesting because it. I know for me, looking back at my childhood, I was, I guess, growing up during that kind of a golden age of education in the 50s in Colorado, and we had a very high standard of education. And the arts were the central theme for me, writing and painting and that sort of thing. But I always had an instinctive tendency to monitor my breathing. And somehow I perceived that there was some kind of interconnectedness between all of these different elements.
Yes. Isn't that amazing? That's wonderful that you did that.
Well, I think that was the Native American ancestry kicking in. I think that is very much an American Indian perception. So I think it was to some degree genetic memory that had surfaced. So you started working with what, kids in Los Angeles? What inner city were you working with?
Yeah, it was in South Central LA.
Ooh. Yeah, it is kind of a hot spot.
Yes. Very intense.
And as a result of that, what was your next step then? What did you segue into? Did you go back into private practice? Or?
Yeah, I did. But I was in the inner city for a long time, and I would work with the kids in groups, the whole classroom, maybe 30 kids at a time, and lead them through a guided imagery at that time, and then have them do some drawing, and then we'd have some discussion, and I could help them with a little bit of sort of, you know, a variation of art therapy, and that they would draw, and I could see what was going on, and I could help them that way. And, it did make some impact. It's hard to know, but some kids would track me down over time, because for a few years I was going into maybe 20 to 25 classes and reaching 600 kids during the week. But I did segue into private practice, and what I found was that the kids are very different, but they're similar. The problems on one hand are different on the outside, but inside it's about loving yourself and becoming responsible for your actions and creating a healthy life for yourself, no matter where you are, no matter what the outside is.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that for quite a while. And because I had the luxury of working individually with children, I could then develop more, go beyond sort of traditional guided imagery or guided meditation, and develop some of these tools so that we could interact more. The first one we just mentioned is, you know, breathing. Basically, I call it a balloon breath because it's an easy visual, but it's really teaching them meditation, even though a lot of the time I was using, like, guided imagery. When they practice the balloon breath at home, say that I'd start them with a minute of balloon breathing, they're actually developing their own meditation practice.
Well, that's brilliant.
Sneaking it in. I always felt, Chris, that with my credentials, because I have that PhD from SC and I am right now an associate clinical professor at UCLA, that would help me reach regular people, you know, just people all over. And I felt like a bridge between the traditional and the spiritual. And even though I might not mention the word spiritual, I'm basically teaching kids to get in touch with that part of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone has different beliefs, so I respect everyone's beliefs, and I go with them. Like, I got an email the other day asking me, do I use Christian imagery? That this woman was using imagery with kids, and somebody was asking for an image of Christ, and I basically said, look, as a psychologist, I'm neutral. I go with whatever the kids believe.
Mm-hmm.
But and teach them to connect with that light within themselves.
Exactly. What was the reception among your peers there? Let's say art teachers and music teachers and people like that that you were surrounded by when you were working in that particular.
You know, I was really fortunate in that I would give a little workshop for the staff, and whoever wanted me to come into the classroom, that's where I went. So I always went where I was welcome.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes. Yes.
That's very good. And then from there, you started creating your own modalities, I guess you would call them?
Sure, kind of pulling them from different places and just what was coming out of my imagination, and because it was a long time ago, I think today a lot of things are sort of, it's like the light bulb, who invented the light bulb, you know, Edison, there's another guy whose name I don't remember, we don't remember, but with developing the tools, it's sort of out there now in general. Like, once you go inside, I like the kids to set up a special place so they could have a safe sanctuary, and they could also do their inner work there. Like, one girl had a special place that had many rooms, you know, like a playroom, an eating room, and then she had the main room where she had a table and two chairs, and she said that's where she did her inner work. And there was another chair for one of her helpers, her guides, because I try to help the kids find, you know, it's kind of tricking the mind in a way. It's finding different helpers. I'll start with animal friends. We might go to wizards or wise people, depending on the age of the child, who are there to help the kids solve their problems in different ways.
Uh-huh.
In fact, one of my colleagues who read an early version of the book said, oh, this is shamanism for kids, because we use a lot of animal friends and, you know, the background and with power animals, and sometimes I'll even take them from different directions and they'll get different animals to help them.
Uh-huh.
And the idea for me in what I'm doing with the kids is finding animals that are loving, are protective, and will help them solve something. One girl was having trouble sleeping. She went to our special place, and she found her animal friend that day was a white, beautiful unicorn with sapphire eyes, and gave her a sleeping potion to help her sleep at night so she could sprinkle it on her head and stay falling asleep. And that...
Wow.
That really helped her fall asleep.
Yeah, that's lovely because, you know, again, you're taking an ancient wisdom paradigm. You know, this is what a lot of the tribal peoples, how they approached healing and connectivity and things like that. So in a lot of ways, you are teaching a form of shamanism, which is really exciting.
Exactly.
Being an old shaman myself, you know, I am a big advocate of this sort of approach to life. So now you're developing these programs and what? Presenting them to the world as CDs and DVDs and
CDs. One is like a double CD, so it's in a DVD case. But I found that, one, I can't be with everyone all the time, and I would like to have children develop these resources on their own. So that's why I wrote The Power of Your Child's Imagination, and over time created some different CDs to help kids along the way. So one girl whose parents were going through a really difficult divorce, she was listening to Discovering Your Special Place CD for 4 years every night just to comfort herself. And another one, Creating a Magical Garden and Healing Pond, I set up because one week I was working with a group of kids and one boy had a stomach ache, one boy had a headache, one boy had a canker sore, and I thought, I got to do something with these kids. So we went to a garden, which was the metaphor for their bodies. Imagine, you know, planted seeds, had all their helpers, plant seeds that could be nurturing and healthy, and while their garden was growing, they could lay down in a healing pond, and they could have the waters wash over them, and they could drink the waters. One little boy made some herbal tea, and so they could heal from the inside and the outside. And when that was done, when we came out of that, the headache was gone, the stomach ache was gone, the canker sore didn't hurt. And the boy who had the canker sore, we made recordings at that time for them. We went home that week, and he said, gosh, it went away in like half the time. So instead of, I don't know, 8 or 10 days, it was gone in 4 days. So that was very promising. And then some people doing some research at a couple of children's hospitals were doing a pilot study with a very different subject. They were adolescents with spinal surgery, but they used the same CD, The Magical Garden and Healing Pond, and those kids that listened felt less pain and more relaxed than the kids that didn't. So it kind of crosses over subjects, which is kind of fun.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, you're giving kids a set of tools to work with that will carry them well into their adult years and empower them for, you know, literally in some ways forever.
Right. That's what I'm hoping. That's the goal. That's the goal. In fact, one of the kids from the inner city, she tracked me down, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8 years later, and she was in high school now. I met her in elementary school, and she was the student body president, and she said, I still remember this image, because I took them basically climbing a mountain of success, when she got to the mountain, the top of the mountain, she felt really good about herself because she achieved her goal. And she said, whenever I'm on the stage, that's what the image I think about, is being on top of that mountain. So I said, okay, I better do a CD on this too.
Yeah, that one sounds like it was a definite, kind of an unsuppressible hit as far as its effectiveness.
Yeah, so a lot of the kids like that too. Even as they get a little bit older, they like that one. And I'll often do a relaxation first, and either that's just to get them in that space where they could really take in the positive suggestions. And sometimes I'll use light coming from the outside going in, and sometimes I'll start with light from the inside going out, just to vary it up a little bit. So even if there's a little spark, like when you're feeling really dark or your kid's in a really bad place, even if this is the spark of light inside, when he or she does their breathing, they could bring that, make it larger and larger, and then spread it out throughout their whole body or even past their physical body.
Well, it sounds like a lot of your themes here are very Jungian. And, of course, that's a school that I really subscribe to. I feel like Carl Jung had so many brilliant ideas that got discarded in the process of psychology instead of the implementation of it.
Yes, yes.
So, well, this is fantastic. Now, how about receptivity and, you know, a greater area? Let's say people back on the East Coast or people in Omaha, Nebraska. What kind of responses have you been getting from various places around the country?
you know, I get emails from people who are reading the book, or people all over the country order the CDs, which is beautiful. And it could be from Omaha. It could be from Clearview, Clearwater, Florida, or it just is all over. So it doesn't really matter. I'm from the East Coast, so I just went back and I spoke at a big psychotherapy conference in Washington, D.C., and that was wonderful. And maybe I haven't been out to the smaller towns, but I definitely hear from these moms out there who want some ideas to help their kids become healthier and happier and transform the stress they're going through. Because today's kids are definitely under more stress than ever before, which is, one might think, is surprising or maybe not. I think APA, American Psychological Association, did a survey. For the first time, they asked kids, little tweens kind of age and teens, are you feeling more stressed this year than last year? And there was a large percentage that said yes. And the strange thing is, or maybe not so strange, is their parents were not aware of how much stress their kids were under.
Well, undoubtedly, the economic situation in this country has created a huge amount of stress for children. Because they feel like they're powerless in the midst of everything that's going on. You know, it's how can you be there for mom and dad when you're a kid?
Right, right. And it is very stressful. So I'm trying to help the kids get in touch with the powers that they do have inside. And I really trust that they have a lot of wisdom inside. And just with a little guidance, we could help them reach it. And to help them develop their own intuition and trust that.
Yeah, the intuitive aspect was something that was very important for me as I was growing up as a child. I was very much aware of the power of the intuition. And, you know, my grandfather was a Native American who was to some degree a mystic. And so I had that presented to me early in life.
Wonderful.
And now I'm recognizing how valuable that was for me, because I'm seeing kids who are, you know, grasping for something to get their grounding with.
Yeah.
And for me, it was always going back to that intuitive nature and re-examining that.
So I'll ask the kids to check in with their different body parts and their different feelings. Like, what does their heart have to say? What's your heart tell you today? What's your belly tell you today? One little, even a three-year-old, said his belly told him to share, which is very sweet. You know, he's at preschool, and maybe his parents had told him or his teacher, but he had now integrated it was coming from him.
Mm-hmm.
Or a little boy who's whose parents had divorced, his heart was just broken, and he wanted to help heal it, and he could send it love. Or another boy who was very angry over the same situation when his parents had divorced, and his anger was exploding. It was a bully at school. And he felt that his anger was like red hot in his belly. And when I asked him, I was looking for an anecdote to that anger. And when I do that, I try to look for two positive against one negative. So I asked him where his calm feelings were, and they were kind of blue in his shoulders. And I suggested he breathe in the blue, calm feelings into his anger, and notice what happened. And he said it kind of covered them up. So then I asked him where he kept his loving feelings, and that was in his heart, and they were white. And so when he breathed in the white loving feelings to his anger, he said that kind of dissipated, like exploded it, like a loving explosion. So for him, love was more powerful.
Well, I think that's true for all of us as we start to stop and examine our feelings. I think that because we do more often than not live in a semi-comatose state.
Right. I know.
We fail to recognize these very immediate things that are happening inside us.
That's absolutely true. And so I want to help the kids early on ask, how do I feel? And often I'll get good or bad. So, okay, is it good? Is it happy? Is it excited? Or is it bad? Is it worried? Is it scared? Is it frightened? And then I'll have them go into their body and kind of, okay, close your eyes, scan your body inside. Where are those scared feelings? What color are they? What shape are they? Do they have a face? Do they have a character? And try to give them a language that they could get a handle on these. And then maybe we'll have a conversation between scared feelings and brave feelings. You know, one boy was really scared of going to the doctor and getting some shots. And so he brought in a pride of lions to watch over him and protect him.
That's kind of neat, pulling from the animal kingdom. And, of course, with that kind of imagery, you have a lot of Disney-enhanced ideas also that you can tap into there. That could be really exciting.
Yes, and I try to start them off and not give them my ideas, but see what they come up with. So sometimes kids will come up with wild animals, or they'll put two animals together. One girl put a dog and a chicken together, called it a dog chicken. Or sometimes they might even use their own animals that live at home, a dog or a cat, and they turn to them for help. But the idea is, it's really, in one sense, you might say it's a part of themselves. So that, you mentioned the Jungian aspect. Or it might be a real power animal from another place. And it doesn't matter to me, as long as it helps the child.
Mm-hmm.
One girl who's like 11, and somebody said to me, it was afraid of sleeping, and she brought in a big dragon to help her and protect her. And someone said, well, doesn't she know it's just her imagination? But what she told me is, my fear comes from my imagination, so I have to go into that realm to heal it.
Yeah, that's the thing that's so amazing with kids. They come up with these profound insights, you know, and we adults are just kind of stunned at how much clarity they have, because they can see things with such clarity that we either take for granted or we're oblivious to. So that must be a source of ongoing excitement for you, watching these little ones come up with these profound understandings, ruminations.
Yes. It's wonderful, and when I think of it, I try to write it down.
Oh, yes.
Because they're gems. They really are. I mean, even this, when I start each chapter with like a little quote from a child, and the simple boy says, the breath is the way in. I just thought that was great, because that's the way into all that wisdom and all that intuition inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the simplicity of their perceptions. You know, they reduce things to, like we were saying, an elemental level, and get the full advantage of the idea.
Yes, and what I really like to do is to have them use these 9 tools and adapt them into whatever situation they're facing. You know, whether it's doing better in spelling. One boy pulled in a spelling wizard who whispered the answer in his ear and washed out his brain and practiced flashcards with him, basically giving him confidence. So he went from 27 errors in a paragraph to 3 or 4 after a few months. Or another boy who was bedwetting at age 9, and he was really uncomfortable with it. And we used his imagination, and we kind of checked his bladder out and used color to make it stronger and to hold the urine. And then we added an alarm clock. This is, of course, imaginary. That would wake him up when his bladder got half full, and he had to put Duracell batteries because 1 week the batteries went dead and didn't wake him up. But he was really using his creativity to help him in practical everyday situations. So I could talk about this work. That's why it reaches people in Omaha or whatever, because it's very practical on one hand. And on the other hand, it could be very spiritual. One girl said she saw God when she went out to another planet, you know, in her imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So it could really run the gamut depending on the situation and where I am and where the kids are.
And what is the primary age range right now that you're working with?
Gosh, you know, I work with kids as young as 3 or 4 and up through finishing college, basically.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a big range. And the way, you know, the principles are the same for me, but the way I work with them, of course, when we're using these imagination techniques, is different language and making it simpler or more complex. So you could start very young with the kids. I thought, when I was doing the CDs, that age 5 would be a good age. But I found that if kids are a little bit younger and they have the language, they could hang on to things.
Well, you know, with all the tech that's evolving in our society, I think it is. I think kids are much more absorptive at a much earlier age. They're really getting stuff at, you know, the age of 3 and 4 and 5, where my generation, it was by the time you were 13, the bell would finally go off.
Right. Exactly. I know. I mean, there is a big brain surge, you know, in teen years and all these, you know, synapses, brain cells. But certainly the kids at very young ages are just brilliant. I'm just amazed at them. There was something on YouTube the other week of a 2.5-year-old using an iPad for the first time. It was hysterical. I mean, she was just, you know, just first time, just figured it out very quickly.
Yeah, that's the thing. They have an intuitive comprehension of our mechanics and our tech, which is really fascinating.
And then, of course, such early experience will change what's happening in their brain. They'll be developing different, you know, neural patterns, and so it's going to be very interesting. But as much as I love all the technology and I respect it and it's not going away, I feel the kids need a balance. And they need that balance from the outside to the inside and taking that time to go inside.
Mm-hmm.
And
taking time to participate in nature, you know, getting out in the woods and learning how they're part of a bigger force of life.
Yes.
That's unfolding around them.
Yeah, that is so, it's so critical. And sometimes kids living in cities don't get a chance to do that so much. So they can go there in their imagination, but gosh, being there in person certainly makes all the difference.
Now, is there an actual pivotal age that you have identified as being, for lack of a better word, a very crucial period for kids? In other words, let's say the age of 9 or the age of 14, or is that more just the individual?
You know, I'm thinking about all the kids I've seen in my practice, and it seems like there are many critical periods in that different roads are being taken. So 9 is a critical age, because I do see a lot of kids at 9, and the teen years are critical, and 5 is critical. So I would say many ages, because at different developmental stages, they're learning different things. They're learning to get along with others. They're learning about themselves. They're learning who they are and how much control or lack of control they have in their life and what they could do to make their lives better. Because a lot of kids, they don't have that much say in what's going on in their physical life, whether their parents are together or not together, what school they go to, how, you know, the friends that they're meeting. But I'm hoping that when they do realize, they do have control about how they respond. Even the balloon breath, that breathing, that meditation helps them center themselves and respond to a situation rather than react. If they're being bullied or someone's not wanting to be their friend, they could create other options, other opportunities for themselves.
Exactly.
And take care of the little vulnerable person inside, because we all have inner kids. So a 10-year-old might have a 5-year-old, or a 5-year-old might have a 3-year-old that was hurt in some way. There was one teenage girl whose parents got divorced when she was 6, and she was just heartbroken back then and partially felt it was her fault. So as a teenager, she would imagine that little girl sitting in her heart crying, and she would comfort her. And over time, that little girl healed, and she was able to grow herself up.
Uh-huh. And how about ethnic situations? Are you translating your programs into various languages so you can connect with the Hispanic community and
Asian
community?
I would love to. My Spanish is fair, not good enough, but it hasn't been translated yet. Part of what is, when I was working in the inner city, I work with Hispanic and Black children, and a few Caucasian kids, but I would have someone in the room with me who was fluent in Spanish translate. So I would say a sentence, and then they would follow me. And what was beautiful about that is the tone stayed the same, because there's something in the tone that's important. And so I reach people that way. But yeah, I've been asked a lot to translate, and I'm not sure whether I should use my voice or someone who's actually fluent. But that's definitely something down the line I'd like to do.
Well, maybe you could actually even make it somewhat conversational and do the combination of your voice with someone who's kind of participating with you.
Yeah.
That to me seems like it might be a really easy way to generate, you know, connectivity kind of across the board.
Yes, yes. And one of the reasons I learned Spanish is because I wanted to reach our, you know, our Hispanic neighbors in this country and in other countries. Same thing with French. I speak French, but that's about it. I went to Korea once and did a workshop for parents, for therapists, for doctors there, and that was wonderful. And I had someone, of course, translating for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel very strongly about reaching people all over the globe.
Well, that's, again, one of those intention things. Maybe that's your next evolutionary shift here as you're progressing forward with these themes.
Maybe. We'll see. Right,
yeah.
Now, the power of your child's imagination is going to be translated into Chinese for Taiwan. So we'll just have to see how things develop.
That could be very, very exciting, because Asian children do seem to have the capacity to take things and really run with them. You know, we see so many brilliant kids who are musicians and artists and everything coming out of the Chinese, Japanese, Indonesian culture all throughout that rim.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, it's just connecting from the heart and helping the kids connect to their own hearts and creating a beautiful world.
How about drugs? That's the big fly in the ointment, I guess, is the best way to describe it for a lot of people in dealing with their children. What kind of success have you had with approaching kids who have drug issues?
I'll teach them to get high in a very clean way. It's clean, it's cheap, it's much better.
Ah, that works.
Because through meditation, through the balloon breath, you definitely could go into an altered state in a very peaceful, beautiful place. One girl said, oh, I feel kind of strange. I know, it's like going into the imagination dimension.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a wonderful adjunct. If a child is really an addict, they need lots of help. They need lots
right.
of help. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it's there are so many elements that contribute to the problem that it's hard to find one size fits all kind of circumstance.
And I'm really hoping that by working with younger kids and teaching them these techniques, that they won't need or they won't feel a desire to go down the drug road.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll have the skills inside to help them, to self-soothe themselves. A lot of times kids are into drugs, yeah, because there's some peer pressure, but because they're not feeling good about themselves and they want to forget their pain.
Mm-hmm.
And using what I've been teaching them, they could, one, go into their pain, have a conversation, find out what the gift is, find out what it's there for, find out what the lesson is, and not be so afraid of it.
And you do put quite a bit of emphasis on the idea that pain is a gift. We just have to learn how to comprehend what it means.
Yes, either physical or emotional pain. Certainly with kids get headaches and stomach aches and things like that, you know, common kinds of pains, and they could use their imagination to help let that go. But then there's the emotional pain, and we could speak to those emotions also and find out what they're there for.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking of one little girl who had terrible headaches, and we did this simple, it's like three questions. What color is it? What shape is it? How heavy it is? And over time, it usually changes from dark and sharp or red or black to rounder and lighter, and then we could let it go. And then I'm also teaching them a little bit about energy, and I might even put my hand about 6 inches from their headache and have them send out the rest of the pain, and it can go through the palm of my hand. And then we might talk to the pain, and what is it there? Why is it, you know, what can you learn? What do you still need to know and do? To relax, to, you know, trust myself. You know, I get all kinds of answers.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that must be interesting to just to observe all the things that kids are observing themselves.
Yes.
Just how they're looking at the world that they inhabit.
Yes. Quite fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And introducing them a little bit into the idea of energy, which they're aware of, and to feel the energy around them. We'll play little energy games, like if I put my hand way out from their body, and can they feel it as it comes closer and where it's coming? Just to start being aware of that, because it's funny, growing up in New York, I kind of knew about energy intuitively. I walked down a street and it didn't feel right, I went the other way. So I picked up energetically something was off, you know. But so it's an easy way of looking at it. But also, if you rub your hands together, you know, your palms together really fast, and then you start letting it go, then you feel that energy in between your hands. That's one way I kind of show kids to just be aware of what energy is, because we know we're all connected, and through all the physics that nothing is solid and just dense molecules, but the idea that we're all connected and really feeling that sense of connection is wonderful.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Jean Ackenberg, who's also a psychologist, she created a study where she used like 10 different healers from all over the world. They might be shamans, they might be Qigong masters, and she had sort of pseudo patients, meaning that, you know, each of the healers was going to send healing energy to these different patients, and they put them in functional MRI scanners to look at brain activity, and the patients didn't know when energy was being sent to them, but when it was being sent, there was changes in their brain activity on the MRI scanner, which I thought was fascinating and a really good kind of beginning study to see how energy affects our bodies.
Well, and, you know, I remember back 25, 30 years ago when there was a lot of research and a lot of attention being paid to the plant kingdom and how plants would, the electrical activity, the neurological activity, for lack of a better word, would increase or decrease according to people in their surroundings and elements in their surroundings.
Yes, I remember that too. Fascinating.
Well, it seems like we're connecting the dots, you know, and becoming more personal with it now. It's no longer that, oh, does my plant think? It's like, oh, am I thinking in tandem with, you know, half the people on the planet?
Right, right.
So right. That is an interesting theme to explore. And, of course, kids are... their inclination is to contemplate these things and wonder about things like this.
Yes, yes, unless we tell them don't.
Right. We have,
you know,
to give them
this
permission.
Is silly, or your imagination, or...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's just a lot of practical things that parents have to take care of, so they don't always attend to these other areas.
How much do you think the average kid is aware of the impressions left on him by people in his surroundings? Like if the parents are always arguing, are kids talking about that? Are they saying, well, my parents are always arguing and I feel miserable as a result of that?
It's usually when I ask them how they're feeling. Because what happens is they're feeling miserable, but they're not thinking about feeling miserable. They just, it's like, as you mentioned, they're not totally conscious of it. And when I ask them about their feelings, because not that many people ask them, and then when they start to have a language for their feelings, then they realize the impact.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, some kids do realize it and hate it, but mostly you'll see the kids sort of, you know, acting out, like they'll become more irritable themselves, or they'll bully other kids, or they'll become sad, or they'll become more active, or so you'll see the signs of it, the symptoms of the effects of the stress in their life, or their parents yelling, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really critical for them to start taking time to connect and ask, how am I feeling? What's going on?
That's a big part of your program, is that self-dialogue.
Yes. And it could be in pictures. You know, and when we use imagery, it doesn't have to be in pictures, because some people see things, some people just feel them, they sense them, some people hear things. One dad said he doesn't see pictures, but like love is a passionate opera, or anger is, you know, cymbals and drums banging strongly for him. So everyone experiences life and these things differently. And so you want to figure out where you are and pay attention to that.
And be able to share that with people in a way that optimizes their growth and their understanding.
Yes, and so people can hear you. So one little boy, I said, look, we don't want to, you're creative, you're brilliant, we don't want to pull that back. We just want to tone it down so you could live in your school, so you could live at home.
Mm-hmm.
So to channel it in a way that's healthy, that, because we are living in a society. A lot of kids would be great. They'd be so happy if they were just out in the country. But in, they have so many expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to figure out a way to be themselves and have their spirit, their wonderful spirits, and also get along with others.
Yes, that's the age-old problem, as our capacity to be tolerant of each other.
Yes, yes.
So, and you're capturing some very important parts of the evolution of individuals here, and giving them tools to work with along that line too.
And if we could keep our hearts open, we're more likely to connect with the heart in another person, and more likely to be tolerant of them, because we feel that connection between us. When I see kids fighting and they're just shut down, their hearts are just shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to open that up and allow them to have a dialogue inside and with their friends or whoever they're with.
So you've got these various programs that are available on your website. What other activities are you, I guess you could say, projecting right now? For what's your next big step? Do you have a major theme that you're working on for your own next evolutionary step with all these different activities?
I think to expand them more and to reach more, you know, to be available to more people, either through the writing of my book or the CDs, or doing some talking, you know, speaking to people on the phones, or going and speaking in groups around the country or around the globe, and basically having people remind themselves that they have the answers inside.
Uh-huh.
And knowing how to tap them in, and these 9 tools are one way of tapping into them. For really what I do is good for adults. I mean, there's really no difference except maybe a little bit of language, but my niche is with the kids. So when I do trainings, it's with adults, and I'm always taking them through these different exercises with the idea that then they could go and help the kids they work with or the kids in their homes.
I would imagine a certain number of people show up to kind of vicariously learn about these things because they recognize that there's something missing within their own lives.
Yes, yes. In fact, some you know, middle-aged gentleman said to me, "I need this for me." And one grandmother said, "Oh, I want a wizard."
There you go.
I want my own wizard. So yes, it could be read on those levels as well. I did a parent support CD as well. I call it the Cave of Great Wisdom, to help the parents feel appreciated and to get in touch with the wisdom that they have inside themselves. And there's a chapter on tools are for grown-ups too. So you really want to look at how you can use them in your own life. It doesn't really matter the age. It's all similar. It's the language. We all want to know how to connect with our wisdom and our intuition and open our hearts.
And that really is the theme that I'm seeing everywhere, is that idea of oneness and unification or reunification, because in our original state we were unified.
Yes.
And now we're trying to get back home to that
right place
of harmony.
That's also from an old Jewish tradition, where in the Kabbalistic tradition, where when God created the world, there was a vessel of light that was broken. And our job is to do good deeds to bring the light back together again, and to bring ourselves back to that whole connection.
Well, and I think that again, when we go back to all societies, when they're in their tribal state and in their evolutionary curve,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of wisdom that was abandoned, I guess is a word for it,
mm-hmm.
As we became more sophisticated, more civilized.
Right, and scientific, and now we want to bring them both together
mm-hmm.
to live in harmony and make them use the best of them, the best of it all.
Well, that's something that's exciting, because you're at ground zero in that process of pulling all of these various components back into usable modalities for us.
Trying to do my little bit here.
Yes.
In our world.
And I think that anybody with a conscience arrives at that point where they recognize that the only way I'm going to make progress is if everybody around me makes progress too. So.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I really believe very strongly in what I do, and I've been doing this for a long time, and I'll continue to reach children and teens and parents and anyone who works with them, and just help them. These tools, these ideas are so simple, yet we don't stop. I mean, just taking 3 minutes of breathing, just remembering to check with your heart, just seeing where you keep your worries in your body and what they want to say to you, and where you keep your wisdom and what it says to your worries. It's so simple and yet can be very profound.
Mm-hmm. And is not really, determined by cost factor. I mean, these are tools that we're born with. We just have to learn how to identify and implement them.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. It's totally free.
Yes.
Totally free.
Well, and that's the beauty of it all. I have a godson, Jasper, and, he's going through his cycles of transformation and evolution. And so I think I'm going to go ahead and grab a couple of your CDs and shoot them off to him, too, because he's really a creative kid.
Wonderful.
And,
wonderful. How old is he?
Jasper is 11.
I love the name.
Yes.
Love his name.
But Jasper is, his mother is a world-class violinist, and they live in New York. So this is an 11-year-old that has dabbled in acting, is a brilliant writer.
Mm.
But he's so caught up in that world of the arts and social interaction in New York City and stuff like that, that sometimes he really doesn't have the grounding that he needs.
Right, right.
So
it's always worth it to take that little bit of time and reconnect and ground and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything that you would like to pass along to our listeners that
you feel is timely or intriguing or whatever?
Well, to remind the parents out there to trust themselves, trust their own intuition. Take the time to be patient with themselves and be forgiving of themselves, because it's a very hard job. It's really challenging to be present with your child all the time. So everyone makes mistakes. We're all human. Forgive and let your kids know how you're doing, but really trust that wisdom inside and take a little bit of time for that.
Mm-hmm. And how can people track you down so they can see what all you've got available and listen to other dialogue that you've had with other people or read articles you've written?
Sure. Just go to my website, which is, of course, www, and then imagery4kids.com, and that 4 is an F-O-R. And there's a plethora of information on my site and audio samples, and also if they're interested in reading more and reading the book, if they go through they click on that picture of the book on that home page, it'll lead them to a place where they can get, I still have like 80 downloadable free gifts when you buy the book. It was kind of fun. Other people's meditations, other people's thoughts, and that's always fun to have as well. And I'm very excited. Frankly, I went to the Apple store, and the new iPad through their iBook actually has my book. I know that they don't have very many books that you can get, so I have on order my own iPad.
Wow.
And I'll get to download my book there. I was very excited to see that. It was so fun.
That is stunning, yes. I'm going to wait for, I think, the second or third generation iPad before I go for that one.
Yeah. That's what people do.
Yeah. That first series has always got the twitchy things that never quite get resolved.
Uh-huh.
So, well, this has been a delightful way for me to start the day, and I really appreciate the chance to chat with you here. And
oh, I'm thrilled, and the work you do is so wonderful. So I'm just honored to be speaking with you.
Well, thank you ever so much, and we'll probably be airing this a week from today, actually, next Tuesday. So.
Oh, great. Good to know. I'll put that up.
Yes, I'll pass it around, and I'll make sure that you have all the appropriate links, and people can tune in and listen to us chatter away here.
Oh, great. Wonderful to speak with you, Chris.
Yes, you also, Charlotte. And you have a spectacular day there in sunny California.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. And that was the Charlotte Resnick interview, which was very insightful. A lot of good thoughts there for you who are parents. And we have concluded another successful Om Times Radio segment. Hope you got something out of it that's useful, that you can apply to your life. And I'm going to leave us with Nightfall, which was the little bit of music that I used for the introduction. It's by a good friend, Johnny Bohannon, down in Georgia. So thank you, Johnny, for a brilliant piece of music. Thank you, Charlotte Resnick, for a brilliant, brilliant interview. And for all you people, you have a spectacular segue into summer right on the horizon here. Good night, all.